Ladies and gentlemen, he's outrageous, he's over the top, he's a fantastic writer, he's exciting, he's on Twitter, and some of his tweets are just, what can you say? Jonathan Harvey, how are
Hello.
You?
I'm very good, how are you?
Well, you've got a new book out, again!
I know, what a year.
Oh, I think it's great. No, it's really great. And one of my neighbours, when they find out about your books, they say, please, can we read it? Because they know I get the advanced copies. Oh, and yeah. I heard her screaming with laughter over this through the wall.
Fabulous. Yeah. Oh, great.
The Girl Who Just Appeared. And it's got a story to it, as always. It's funny and it always has a message. You write like that, though, don't you?
Well, I don't know. I sort of write the stories that I'd like to read. So this is just the story I'd like to read. I suppose that's my natural bent, is to keep it funny. I'm worried that I bore people. So if you stick a few gags in, people might come back. And I suppose with my soapy background, I do like to finish each chapter with a bit of an ooh-ah, Mrs. moment. So you want to carry on reading, but I'll let other people be the judge of what my last style is, I suppose.
Just as you mentioned that, I'll pick up on that because it's an interesting point. One of the most wonderful things, because of course you're a scriptwriter, one of the top ones for Coronation Street, but one of the wonderful things about Currie is those gags. Those gags. How long have they been there? Have they been there for years?
I've been there for 10 years.
Yeah. But were they there before you? I mean,
were the gags there? Sorry.
No, those
yeah,
lines.
No, I think so. Yeah. No, I think they've always been there. I mean, that was part of the reason why I always watched it. I mean, I remember seeing, it must have been like 20 years ago, somebody like Fred Elliott and a few of the other older men leaning against the bar, and then one of the women going, to think that Walt Disney died without drawing that lot. And it's always had a good sense of humour about it, Corrie.
My favourite one recently was Deirdre and saying the dog's taking it very badly.
It is
a very sensitive dog.
Yeah.
Right, my first question about the book, The Girl Who Just Appeared. And by the way, talking about appearing, Jonathan is making a guest appearance at Waterstones in Liverpool 1 on Monday the 18th. And I'm going to come down and get a photo because I need a photo. I haven't got a photo with you. It's ridiculous. And I have photos with everyone famous. So the first question's got to be, why Toxteth?
The story's about this woman from down south who is adopted, and she goes to Liverpool to trace her birth family, and all she knows is that she was born in a flat on Gambier Terrace. And I suppose it's because when I was little, my mum worked in a family planning clinic on Gambier Terrace, and I wanted to write. So basically, you've got two stories going on, just to fill people in. You've got the present-day story of this woman trying to trace her family. And when she goes to Gambier Terrace, she rents the flat that she was born in, and she finds a diary under the floorboard, like you do, of a 13-year-old lad living in that flat in 1981. And I suppose I wanted to write about, an interesting, for me, part of Liverpool's history, which is when the Toxteth riots were. And so for me, it was important to locate it somewhere where that would be someone's first-hand experience. And also the story then... It just felt right for it to be taking place on Hope Street and Gambier Terrace. And I love it round there. And it's just, you're so close to the town centre and you've got the cathedral looming down over you. It just felt like quite a dramatic place for that part of the story to be set.
What does Liverpool mean to you?
What does Liverpool mean to me? Well, it means home, I suppose. I mean, I've not lived there for years, but I'm back all the time. And I suppose it's just a place... If anything goes wrong in my life, I have this natural inclination, this natural pull to just get back there and drive around and look at all the old sites. It's sort of, I don't know, I have an incredible fondness for it that's never gone away.
Are you pleased with this book? It's a silly question to a writer, but are you pleased with the book?
Yes, I'm very pleased with it, I suppose, yeah. And the response of everyone who's read it so far has been really encouraging. And yeah, I think it's probably the best one I've written to date. So I'm pleased with that. And I'm pleased that the book isn't just about the woman's journey. It's about this lad in Liverpool in 81, which is very different tonally to what she's going through in the present day. And that mystery of how might these two people be related and do their lives become intertwined at any point. I enjoyed sort of pulling that off, you know. As well as telling a good yarn.
It's interesting you say that because when you've read the book, I think every one of us listening now knows a Darren with his mother.
Yeah, <It's> poor thing. She's not a very nice mother.
but we all know one like that.
Yeah. Well, that's, I don't know if that's encouraging to hear or discouraging. But, yeah. She's quite a neglectful mother, let's just put it that way.
Where did you get the idea from? When you think of this, did it just happen, the story, or is it something been going around in your mind?
Well, I suppose I've always been interested in adoption. I mean, I'm not adopted. I one thing I've always been able to take for granted is knowing where I come from, and I really look like my brother. I really sound like my dad. I've got my mother's hair. I'm very much a Harvey. But other friends of mine who don't have that sort of... that comfort, I suppose, and I've had friends in the past who've been adopted who have gone on that journey to find who their birth family was and found them and the repercussions of that, I suppose. And I love programs like Who Do You Think You Are, with people tracing their family trees and finding out secrets from the past. And I love programs like Long Lost Family. I can't really get through that without choking up. So, yeah. So I was interested in somebody who didn't have the privilege that I have of knowing your own family and having to find that out. And I think sometimes with adoption, that when a child is given up, it's they've come into the world in sort of quite messy circumstances, and often the outcome of tracing that birth mother or birth family can be messy as well and isn't always as straightforward as we'd all hope it would be. So I was interested in writing about that as well, I think.
You know, I'm adopted.
No, I didn't know that, actually.
Yeah, I was given away at 3 months. And
really?
After my mum died, the woman who brought me up, who was the most wonderful woman on God's earth, I went back looking for... You'll love this. I went back looking for my birth mother.
Yeah.
And the first thing that I did when I knocked on the door, it was very easy to find. I opened the door and I nearly fell over. It was me in a frock.
Really? Gosh.
That was the first thing. And then she said, you'll love this as a writer. The first thing she said, don't think you're getting any money. And the second thing she said, I am so sorry to have brought you into the world with your problems.
Oh, dear.
Isn't that a great start to a relationship?
Hiya. Whatever happened to hello? And where was she from?
Liverpool. Liverpool.
Really?
Yeah, and she was living in the same address that was on the birth certificate. It's ridiculous.
Amazing.
We found her overnight. Yeah. But then when she realised who I was, which is not anything important, she started to think, oh, maybe it's time to be his mother. Because he's quite famous, even though he's one of those.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
So.
I know. It's really hard. I think it's really hard sometimes.
So
I mean, I've had friends who've had really positive experiences of finding their birth families, but I've had other people who, where it's sort of been, they've needed to find out and they've needed to know where they came from.
Yeah.
But it's been quite easy for them to then close the door on that past and concentrate on how positive their adoption's been, I think.
I'm talking to Jonathan Harvey. He's got a new book out called The Girl Who Just Appeared. He's also appearing at Waterstones on the 18th of August at 7 p.m. And there's tickets on sale. It's a ticket deal because so many people always want to go and see him. Something I've always wanted to ask you, and I keep forgetting to ask every time I speak to you. Do you get a different reaction to writing a book as to writing a script, as to writing a play?
They're all different experiences, really. The most obvious one is writing a play, because you can sit in the audience quite anonymously and hear the laughter or see the tears, or you can go to the loo at the interval and hear people slagging it off or praising it. With telly watching tends to be pretty insular. You know, I would probably watch my episode, The Coronation Street, with my partner, but it would be very rare for there to be more than like three people in the room, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't. It's not really a communal experience like the theatre. And then the books are sort of even less so, because it's just a really personal relationship between, you know, the man or woman reading it and the book in their hand. So it's hard to tell. It's nice doing things like the Waterstones evening, because my book's quite funny. I do, you know, it's always a bit of a laugh for the audiences when I read from them. So that's nice, because you get responses from that. And Twitter's really handy for people giving you feedback and telling you that they'd like the books or what they think. They're all very different experiences, really. I mean, how lucky am I that I'm able to juggle the three different things, you know. But Writing the books is the most, probably the purest of those forms, because there's nobody else getting in the way. There's no actors messing up lines or directors getting it wrong. It's either good writing or not.
You're a man that is sometimes described as acid, but underneath all that is a sensitive person. So can you take criticism or does it hurt?
I think the older I get, the better I am with it. And I'm lucky in that. With Coronation Street, there's 18 writers, and it's very easy. If the show's being praised, you can go, oh, yes, that's me. If it's being panned, you can go, oh, it's all down to everybody else. No. I suppose there's an anonymity to writing for Corey. You know, you don't get personal attacks about it like you would if you wrote a really rubbish play. And with the novels, the sort of books I write, they're not reviewed in all the Sunday papers, and people pulling them apart. You know, I'm sort of a little bit under the radar in terms of personal criticism recently. But when I used to have lots of plays on, sometimes I'd get upset, but sometimes as an artist, in inverted commas, you just go, I knew there was a problem with that play. I knew that it was 20 minutes too long, but I just couldn't find a way to make it right. So when the reviews come out and say, well, it was 20 minutes too long and there's some scenes that are rubbish, you have to hold your hands up and go, yeah, you're absolutely right. But when it's a bit more personal and you get to know the critics and they're sort of taking out their anger on you, that's a different thing, and it can be quite hurtful, yeah.
Jonathan, you said at the beginning this is your favourite book and the best book you've written so far. Yeah. Do you pinch yourself and realise how successful you are, or do you take it for granted? And I mean that seriously.
No, I don't. I pinch myself to go how lucky I am, I suppose. I don't think about the success because, I just pinch myself to go, I'm really lucky. Because I've got lots of friends who are writers, and, you know, I know it's a really hard business to be in. But I am really lucky that I get lots of different types of work. So it's more, you might call it success. I'd call it luck. That, God, I'm really lucky that I'm not. It's not 25 years ago, and I'm stuck being a teacher as I was then and being pretty miserable. I'm doing a job that I really love and that, you know, I'm doing all right at. Do you know what I mean? I'm really lucky that I'm not in a 9-to-5 and I'm sort of following my dreams, if you like. You know, I'm not being run down by the government having to go on strike. I'm just really lucky to do the thing that I really enjoy doing.
I was at a dinner party recently with a lovely actor. I won't mention his name, but he paid a nice compliment. He said, I was talking about you and the book and everything. And he went,
oh, right.
I would love to read his words. And I thought from an actor that was tremendous.
Well, that's very nice.
Yeah, I just thought that came over so well.
Oh, yeah, very nice.
I like that. Great to see Les Dennison, Corey. I'm so chuffed about that. I just can't wait for him to tongue Gail.
Well, I hope that you're rewarded very soon.
I'm sure I'm going to be. It's getting very near to it. It's been a peck on the cheek. So what's the next book, Jonathan?
The next book? Well, I'm 3/4 of the way through that one. It's about, that'll be out this time next year. That's about a family coping with the father going missing. It's about what it's like as a family to live with a missing person's case, I suppose. So,
so the
father's gone missing about 7 years previously, and it's just how that's impacted on their lives. And each chapter's told from a different point of view of each member of the family.
That's amazing. Now, once again, I can relate to that. I actually, several years ago, found somebody through my radio show. We actually found somebody, and it was on Trevor MacDonald did it on the news, and you can't say how much that meant to me. You know, is it difficult for you to juggle your time?
A little bit, yes, it is. But I'm sort of getting there, and I always panic when I've got a deadline looming in a few weeks' time because I think, well, I'm never going to make it, and I always do. So I think the older I get, the more I think, well, don't sweat the small stuff. You'll get there in the end. And if you're a few days late with the deadline, does it really matter? Nobody died. It's difficult sometimes. But I mean, listen, I don't have children. My hours are my own. So if I do have to work late or start early, and you know, I'm not really hurting anybody. I'm not missing out on the school run. So it's all okay.
Do you ever get writer's block?
I don't, touch wood. I'm just going to find someone to touch.
Wow.
No, I think because I have such variety, and lots of different types of writing going on, there isn't really the opportunity. And with things like Coronation Street, if I didn't have any ideas, it wouldn't really matter for a while because the other writers would be coming up with the ideas and I'd still be getting my episodes to write. And with the novels, it's one a year. And so I've got a year in which I can be thinking about the next one and thinking, what's the idea? And I suppose that's what writer's block is to me, is having a lack of ideas. Some days, I mean, you sit down and you just can't be bothered.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, if you've got a hangover or something, it's like, oh, God. And it's like pulling teeth and you'll write three words and they'll all be rubbish words. But I don't see that as writing a writer's block, really. That's just self-induced.
Tell me,
rubbishness.
What do you use Twitter for? What do you get from Twitter?
I get from Twitter a sort of... because I think the main thing about writing is it's very lonely. You're on your own all the time. And so for Twitter, for me, it's like every 20 minutes, I'll just have a little look if it's on in the background on my computer and see what people are up to. It's sort of like being in a club and seeing what everybody's up to and being nosy. You can do that for 5 minutes and then get back to work. And I suppose it's, for me, it's the equivalent of working in a big office and having a few water cooler moments every day. And then in the evenings watching telly, I just like to see what everybody else thinks about things like that. But yeah, for me, it's a way of not feeling like you're just sat in a room on your own.
Reading the book and seeing the book and seeing the cover, especially the cover with the picture of the biscuit tin, I wonder right now how many people have got those tins under their floorboards.
I know, wouldn't that be amazing?
It would be. It's a TV show.
Yeah,
it's a TV show.
What secrets lie buried beneath, you know, in the back of your airing cupboard? You just don't know, do you?
Not at all. I'll finish off by asking you from the book, Girl Who Just Appeared. When they put the book down, I know you like people to just say, wow, that was just a great, enjoyable laugh. But is there anything, any hidden message in this book?
I think it's about... oddly, not judging a book by its cover, and I don't mean that about the cover of this book, but there's quite a few characters in this book who aren't what they at first appear. And I suppose, if anything, I want people to sort of, without wanting to patronise the readers, to just sort of think twice about, oh, God, I didn't think that about that person. And just, I don't know, not to take everything at face value and, you know, to just think about things, I suppose. And if anything, I want people to think about when they're reading the book is like, oh gosh, I wasn't expecting that, or I got that character wrong. And it's just about giving people second chances, I suppose.
Jonathan Harvey, the book is called The Girl Who Just Appeared. You're going to be at Waterstones in Liverpool, one on Monday, the 18th of August. You have to get tickets, so I would apply to them very quickly. Thank you once again for spending time.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.